Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch Podcast. I'm Matt Rossi. I'm your host, and with me this week is Joe Earthdawn Perez. How you doing, Joe?
I'm going back to the 90s.
Yeah. Seriously, we're just doing the pre-show for the show. If you don't, like, listen to our pre-show, you might want to start coming around and doing it, because we talk a lot about a lot of different things. Or, mostly, it's tabletop role-playing games, because that's kind of a thing Joe and I both have. Someday, we'll do the comic book discussion.
We're going to at some point. It's going to happen. Yeah. But I mean, and if you can't make it here for the live show and you're listening to this recording, maybe consider donating to our Patreon so you can get access to the unedited show, which includes the pre-show and post-show.
Yes. Although usually the post-show is like 5 minutes of us at most, and then one of us going, I have to pee.
Because we're old, folks.
Yeah, we're old in an hour and a half of this. But regardless, we're here to talk about Blizzard Entertainment and its many games. And this week, actually, I thought one of the things we do, instead of really worrying too much about top stories, because we're kind of in a lull right now, where nothing, you know, they've beaten the raid, like the world first race is done. Pretty much just new stuff is coming out as it comes out. It's dribs and drabs. We talked this weekend on the Lore Watch podcast about the Covenant campaign storyline ending. That was something that happened last week. So now we're kind of just in a holding pattern until we find out what's coming next. And it'll be, I think, I expect us to go a month before we hear what the next thing is going to be.
Probably. I would say that's probably a good estimate.
The reason I expect it to be about a month is because BlizzCon Online is at the end of February.
Yes.
And that's, so it's a good place for us to talk about what we think we're going to hear and see at BlizzCon Online. This is all speculation. We don't know anything. If you hear us say this has going to happen, don't be, oh God, they spoiled it for us, because we don't know. We're just speculating.
Yeah, we have no bloody idea.
But I'm going to start by turning to Joe and saying, what do you think they're going to talk about the most at BlizzCon Online this year? What do you think is going to be the main stuff that they cover?
So I think what they're going to wind up talking about first and foremost is, I think there's probably going to be something to talk about the accomplishments of what they were able to do with releasing games and content throughout the state of this world. And I think that's something that they should take time to do. And I think that'll be part of probably their opening ceremonies, thanking their employees, thanking the people that actually work on these games, and highlighting all the actual work they do. Because don't forget, like, as we're sitting here playing Shadowlands, a lot of that work, a lot of that lead up to the release in that final push, which is one of the most critical, was being done when people couldn't work in offices, they couldn't work with their teams, they had to figure out other ways to get in touch with each other and stay on top of things. So I think that they're going to take some time, and I hope they take some time to highlight all of the hard work that our employees did during that time. As far as the actual content of the games, I think a lot of it is going to be spent on Diablo. I think that with Diablo 4 and Diablo Immortal now starting to pick up steam in the news cycles just a little bit, and we've talked about it several weeks here, I think they're going to spend a good chunk of time highlighting Diablo 4, talking about what's coming, talking about where they are in that process, and also talk a little bit about Diablo Immortal, possibly even more than a little bit, depending on where they are with trying to maybe get people to pick up a demo and play it at while they're home. I also think that would be a really good thing for them to try to do, is make a demo available for a US audience, get people, encourage people to actually play it and try it, because we talk about this all the time. People who have actually played that game enjoy it. It's fun. So I think Diablo is going to probably be the bulk of content, because it's probably the most new, most fresh, because we don't have StarCraft 2 coming out or any more information about that. Heroes of the Storm is still in maintenance mode, for lack of a better term. It's still getting content, but it's much, much slower content. So there's probably not going to be a whole lot to be done with that. Hearthstone just got an expansion released. We might get news about another upcoming expansion or new modes for that. But even that's a game that's, the cadence of updates has slowed down a bit. So I think it's going to be the Diablo show, and then probably talking about where Shadowlands is going next.
Yeah, I expect to hear about Overwatch 2, which we haven't heard much about since BlizzCon 2019.
Yeah, we've heard anything about that.
Yeah, we know that they're working on it, but we don't know exactly what the state of the game is right now. So that I expect to hear something about. We've heard like enough to know that there's two or three other projects happening at Blizzard that we don't know anything about.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of unnamed projects.
Yeah, so I expect we'll possibly hear something about one or two of them if they're further along. That's one of the things that you're kind of always forced to speculate on, is in terms of like what is actually happening, what's going to be the fate of this, what's going on with this. I definitely don't expect. Let me put it this way: I don't expect to get too much more. I think there's going to be the next Shadowlands patch is probably going to be featured at BlizzCon.
Oh yeah, it would have to be. I think at this point, especially with what we talked about with the Covenant campaigns coming to an end, us starting to get to the point where the raid's coming to a close. People are starting to actually leave the raid now if they haven't already. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I think in terms of what we're going to see or hear about Shadowlands next patch. I'm going to go out there right now and speculate that we're going to get a new 5-man dungeon of the Karazhan / Operation Mechagon type, mm-hmm. where it comes in as a hard mode / mega dungeon where there's a lot to do.
A mythic only dungeon type thing.
Kind of. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe it won't be mythic dungeon, 'cause they've always ended up releasing them to heroic later anyway, but that kind of big dungeon where it's based around like, you know, five-person play. I think that's probably something that's going to happen. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I generally feel like the next content patch has to have something that is more content that we don't currently have. Like I feel like they're not going to be able to get away with doing what they've done with some patches where it was just more of the same or here's a raid. I feel like they're probably going to have to do like they did in Battle for Azeroth with Mechagon and Nazjatar, where they give us more stuff. I think that's probably going to be the next big patch. I could be wrong, and if I am wrong, I'm sorry, I told you something wrong, guys. But this is speculation. This is not. I don't have a note from anybody here. I'm just blue skying. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get a new raid or not. I kind of hope
we don't get a new raid right away. I kind of want them to focus on smaller content a little for in between. I like the cadence of raid, smaller content, or smaller raid, and then another big raid. I really like that.
Smaller raid I could see. I don't. One of the things about previous expansions going back to Legion now is that they've had stuff roll out over time, and you've gotten the raids haven't dropped when the patch comes out. And that's something I think would be good for them to go into the future, where they could put in a patch where halfway through it, we then get a small 2 or 3 boss raid. And then towards the next patch, just before it comes out or just after it comes out, you could then get the next major raid and so forth. And things, the cadence of delivery for content has been a lot better in Legion and Battle for Azeroth.
I agree.
Warlords was not good, but they've done really well.
They've learned
on that cadence, the speed of content release, the dribs and drabs of it, how they make it work. So that's something to keep in mind on too.
So here
you're trying to talk, so I'm going to shut up.
There are two things that come to mind too as well, and there's something that I've been screaming about since before Shadowlands release, is that when you go up to the Ring of Transference now and you look around, there are spots for more doors. Like if you look at it, there are, I believe, 2 or 3 empty spots. I wouldn't
something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get another door. I wouldn't be surprised if the way the story is going, it leads us into, we need more help. Because think about where the story is with the game, just in general. And this is not going to get into any heavy lore discussion, but and sorry for some slight spoilers, but you kind of already knew it was coming because he's the last boss of the current raid. But you take down Denathrius. We have the cinematics that tell us a little bit about what's going on with the jailer. And if you did any of the questing today, if you're caught up to date with your Torghast stuff and you did the Bolvar quests in Ouroboros, you kind of have an idea of what we're facing. And it's getting to be one of those things where they're starting to understand that it's scarier. But one of the things that Thrall says is we can't go rushing in. If we go rushing in, you know, with what we have, we are doomed to fail. So I could see a content release coming up that introduces maybe another land of the Shadowlands, maybe not necessarily another faction, but like we were talking about before with, you're saying like Mechagon and Nashatar and stuff like that. A zone like that would make sense in there. It would fit really, really well. And they could do a dungeon or a mini raid or something as partway through that, but maybe it's a new zone where we have to actually, you know, build up some rep to get them onto our side to help us with what's going on. Or the other thought is maybe it's broker content. And I've been kind of on this kick where, I mean, I'm not the only one. I don't trust the brokers. I mean, you're in an area right now in game, for those of you that are watching the live stream of Maldraxxus, like you're near the Theater of Pain. They capture a whole bunch of stuff from other planes of existence and barter and sell it for entertainment purposes or whatever they're doing. But I would not be surprised if maybe we're sent to go deal with some more stuff with the brokers. And I'm saying that as you get to the version of Exalted with Venari, and you do her quests and I'll do some of that interactions, there's stuff that's sort of leading me that way, that you might be going to either disrupt the cartels or deal with the cartels or find out more about the cartels. And that might be something that we wind up spending some time doing as well. So I would not be surprised if either of those.
There's broker bosses in several dungeons.
There, one in the other side and then one in Castle Nathria.
There's one in Theater of Pain as well.
Is there? Isn't there? No, not in Theater of Pain. No.
I just remember there being one. No, there's the other side. There is Castle Nathria. I thought there was one more, but I'm not.
Not in dungeons.
But there's that to deal with. There's the fact that the brokers themselves even say stuff, you know, very much the dropping a shady statement, you know, halfway when they think they're out of everybody's earshot point. So, yeah, there's room there. I still want to see more with Thros.
Oh, absolutely, because that ain't done yet.
Pretty much every Covenant campaign feels like it could be expanded upon in some way. Like the Kyrian one, I don't know. Like, you know, you kind of don't, they don't really have any leaders. The bad guys don't have any leaders left at the end of the Kyrian campaign. Mild spoilers, but you know, that happens. But there's pretty big open like stuff for both the Necrolords and the Night Fae. I feel like they have a lot left to deal with.
Yeah. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if they announce maybe Covenant Campaign 2.0, right? Because,
well, yeah, they did that previously with Legion.
Exactly. When they did the Order Hall stuff.
So yeah, that's all possible. Basically, I think we've done as much speculating as we can, really. The thing is we don't really know much. If there's going to be a new game announcement, they have kept it magnificently under wraps. Nobody's even talking about it.
I'm gonna make an out of left field prediction for one of the games being announced. I think we might get a new game, and I think it's going to be an RTS.
Okay.
So the only reason I'm saying that is that StarCraft II is pretty much done. RTSs are starting to pick up in popularity yet again, with third parties filling that gap. I would not be surprised to see Blizzard re-enter the RTS ring with a new IP.
Okay, I think the timing would be weird considering companies like Frost Giant exist now, but I get where you're going with that. It makes a certain amount of sense. I honestly, I have no idea what they're working on in terms of other projects. With Diablo definitely taking on much more of an open world feel than previous versions of Diablo, I feel like they're kind of making the Diablo games be the open world sandbox art, you know, role playing game that people have wanted from them for years. They're kind of doing it with Diablo, just in a different direction. So I don't know what they're going to do, what those other projects are. I wouldn't be amazed if they released something roughly akin to Pokemon Go. It's been long enough.
We've been begging for it.
Yeah. But at any rate, we probably should move on and talk about some emails. We've got a few emails and comments from from Discord this week. So if you have a question for the show, you can go to our Discord. We've got two channels. There's the podcast queue and there's the Patreon podcast and queue questions channel that you can use, or you can go to our queue questions channel, which is not for patrons only. And we took questions from both this week. And if you'd rather email us, you can also do that. We got some emails this week, thankfully. Thank you, guys. It makes my life a lot easier when I go open the email and there's actual questions there. That's true. You can send that to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch. And we will take what we can get. So thank you very much for asking about any game. Most of these are pretty much WoW. It's a lot of WoW questions. But if you have questions about Diablo or Overwatch or anything, feel free to ask them. Joe usually reads them for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not in the slightest. So our first up, we are going to have a question from Korix. Question for either show. Well, we know who won that battle. Some Venthyr NPCs say, it's been so long since I laid hands on a living mortal. Surely they only deal with the dead. When would a normal Venthyr have the chance to interact with a living mortal? Any thoughts on this? Many thanks, Korix.
Well, we know that the Naru led an assault force into Revendreth at one point. That's where all that blasted out stuff is from. They could have very well had some of their mortal followers with them. They might then, and we know that incursions from other realms of existence happen to the Shadowlands. That's why they have the Necrolords, the Maldraxxi. The reason that they exist is because sometimes people invade the land of the dead. So there's ways it could have happened. Also, for that matter, I don't know of any time where the Venthyr have invaded the living world, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. That's one of those situations where just because evidence of absence is not, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. I don't know what the Venthyr do with their spare time. I mean, it seems like they'd be pretty busy, but maybe they do occasionally go on vacations to like the land of the living and do awful stuff. I got no idea.
I think there's something to it where we were talking about this before. Remember how the Lich King basically made vampires, right? What if it's not the first time they've been in our plane? There's nothing that says that a Venthyr who has been reformed can't travel, like you said, right? We don't know that these races that we're interacting with can't leave in some capacity, maybe even for a limited amount of time. If we can, why can't they? Now, some of that might be a little gray area, sure. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe some of the game world stories about classic mythological creatures, because there are boogeymen, right? And yes, this is a fantasy world that has monsters aplenty to deal with, but there's always boogeymen. There's always, fictitious folklore-y type things. And maybe in the WoW universe, it's based off of reality. Maybe it's based off of a Venthyr that slipped through one of those hungering beasts portals and wound up in a different plane. There's nothing that says that they might not be able to transubstantiate it into reality. So maybe they've been there before. Also, maybe it goes the opposite direction. Very clearly, we can go there, right? We wind up going through a rift in time and space essentially to get to the Shadowland. What if we're not the first? What if it's happened in the past previously where somebody's accidentally done that?
Well, you'll notice too that when you get to like Bastion, they don't freak out at your presence. It's unusual and you smell like the maw, but they're pretty quickly like, oh, it's a living mortal. Like if it never happened, you'd expect it to be a bigger deal.
And I also think about stuff like, I would agree with you, but I was also thinking about like Outland and Draenor, our version of it, not the one that didn't blow up. Like if a massive amount of death can cause a tear or a weakening of the barrier, nothing says it couldn't have happened there too. That planet exploded. It blew up. What's Outland now is just bits and pieces of it. We don't know how many things died on that. Probably
or,
a lot.
Or for that matter, might have gotten torn off and then... We just talked about the brokers going forth and kidnapping things from other realms of existence and throwing them in the pits in Maldraxxus. Mm-hmm. Who's to say they're not also like they're milling to make pretty big trades for Anima. It's quite possible that some jaded Venthyr made a deal with a broker to like bring him someone alive to torment.
Or they just wind up going through on a traveling salesman thing and hi, get your live mortals here fresh from the prime material plane, and it'll only cost you 10 buckets of Anima.
Yeah, we don't really know what's been going on over the entire existence of the Shadowlands that we're just now visiting. So it's quite possible that these guys have had multiple encounters with living mortals. They recognize you pretty quickly. I mean, they oh, you're a living mortal. Like, I mean, like, the ones saying it are just saying it in the world. They're not like specific ones I'm confronting. They're just random, you know, random Venthyr guys saying this. So, you know, I mean, granted, they all seemed pretty aware of what Denathrius was doing too. So maybe they, maybe that was the problem, was he told everybody, oh, the living mortal's coming. It's a Moonwalker. Just go along with it. But I mean, they don't seem to, they're not on the back foot about any of this. So I'm willing to accept that they knew, they know what mortals are because they have in fact been seeing them. So.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say about that, but I mean, yeah, I think it would be cool and maybe they'll do something with it. Maybe we'll get a little something about that later on. Our next question comes from Sergio. Don't know if I pronounce that right. Don't care. Question for the Blizzard Watch podcast. Is there any way to save the anima items you get and not add them all at once? If I leave them in the bank, will they not get hoovered up in the Sanctum Reservoirs? I'd like to save some for next week's 1000 anima quest. Saving them does nothing.
Yeah.
It's acquiring them that triggers the quest.
Yeah, you'll notice that you don't have to go turn them into a reservoir at all. You can collect 1000 anima that week and the quest is completed and you didn't put any of them in the reservoir yet. And you can collect more anima that week and nothing happens. Like, once you get 1000, that's it. It's just getting them that counts.
The trick, if you really want to do it, is if you have a quest, once you hit the 1000 that rewards anima, you can bank it as long as it's not one that expires at the end of the week, like the weekly dungeon. But
yeah.
But you can wait to turn in like standalone quests, not world quests or timed quests, until the new week begins. Like, my guild group just defeated Denathrius. And so one of the things you get from Denathrius is a quest item to go turn in that gives you a ton of anima. It's like 1250 anima or something like that. So we didn't turn it in yesterday. We turned it in today when the new week kicked over to immediately get that 1000 and get that renown. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's sort of the hack your way around.
Yeah. But there's no point to like not putting stuff in the reservoir because you're trying to game the system, because it won't count for anything. You got it already. It won't work on the next week. One thing you can do is you can start your mission table. Like, you mm-hmm. can do, like,
yeah.
say like Monday night, you could do it. You could queue up as many anima missions as you want. And if they finish before, you don't have to take them until the new week rolls around and you have the new quest. You can get a lead that way. Anything where it doesn't expire and you can turn it in after you've started the next week, you can do. But once you have the actual item in your bags, that's all that matters. You don't have to turn it in.
And as Zell the Canadian, our good friend in chat, is pointing out, if your bags are full, anima items get sent to your mailbox. That will not count for your earn 1K totals because it hasn't entered your inventory. So that's another... You just have zero bag space, and then you don't get that stuff until you take it out.
Yeah. So there's ways to cheese it a little, but more or less, there's no big reason to worry about that.
Agreed. All right. Our next question comes from Suggle Kitten. Hello there, my good people. I am wondering your experience on having an alt skip the leveling. I did this on an undead warlock and was dumped into Maldraxxus. That's it. It's kind of flat. It looks like you can't do the covenant stuff until 60, so now I'm wandering around doing random quests. The once in a while calling is not much help either. So that sounds like Threads of Fate?
Yeah.
Yeah. I am not super keen on Threads of Fate right now. It wasn't what I expected it to be. It's not a bad thing. It's just not what I expected it to be, which I think is the problem. So, yeah, you get dumped into wherever you pick. So if you picked Maldraxxus as your covenant, you get shoved over there. But the trick is you are supposed to aid those local areas. Now, you can go to Ouroboros, and you get a quest that says choose and go do this, and choose and go do this, choose and go do this. Or you can literally just go to the zones. If you notice, you'll have all the flight paths or a good chunk of flight paths that lead from Ouroboros to all of the different Shadowland realms. And when you get to that realm, or if you get into a dungeon from that realm, you'll get a progress bar that immediately starts tracking of helping that particular covenant. That's how you advance. That's how you level, is going and doing world quests, going and doing random quests that you find in the world, going and doing bonus areas, and then getting a big push at the end when you're done, after you've completed and filled up that sort of help this zone bar. And then you also get renown for completing that as well. It's to help you sort of catch up on the renown arc a little bit. But yeah, that's what it's intended to do. And there's, I will say that I think that the lack of guidance is probably the weakest part of Threads of Fate right now, especially because you can't flip back to the other one. But it essentially is just go do whatever you find on any of the zones and try to sally forth and hit the 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things about Threads of Fate that I liked is how I used it. The character that I'm currently playing on the stream, if you're looking at it, is my most advanced character. But it's not the first character I leveled. I leveled to 60 on a different character, and then I started playing this character. And I played this character kind of side by side with my main at the time, mm-hmm. who I then switched to this one from. And the way I did it was I got to 60 on the first one. This character was around level 57 or 58. And I used Threads of Fate to basically skip Revendreth. That's all. I just skipped Revendreth with it. And in fact, I was high enough level that by taking Threads of Fate, I actually got enough experience to level before I left Ouroboros. So I hit level 60 and was just, okay, I'm level 60. I've already picked my covenant. I don't have to go anywhere or do anything. That's something you can do with Threads of Fate that I enjoy because mm-hmm. it means not having to see all the zone stories that you've already seen a couple of times. The problem with Threads of Fate is mostly what Joe just said, that there's no real guidance on how it works. So you spend a lot of time basically just kind of banging your head against, okay, am I supposed to go somewhere else? That nobody tells you, go do other things. Don't just hang out here in Maldraxxus. It's boring and ugly. And that I think that's a little bit of a problem that could be cleared. Like they could make it more clear without making you just kind of want. There could be somebody at your sanctum who told you, go do other stuff, please.
The other interesting thing that I think is, or I shouldn't say interesting, something of note with that, just to give you a warning, is if you do go to another zone or if you do go to like a dungeon and you pick up the next zones thing, the quest to pick a zone like you're used to seeing in like Legion and items like that will not be available in Ouroboros. You will already have it in your bag or in your quest log. The difference is you don't get the quest from Ouroboros. It doesn't auto track. You'll have it. It won't auto track in your log. So you'll have to go in and turn it on. That was a mistake I made. That was really, really weird because I was like, oh, this is bugged. I'm not getting any credit for doing the Revendreth stuff and trying to complete this and get through this at 60 so I can go do the other stuff. But then somebody pointed out to me, he's like, no, did you do a dungeon and you picked up the Revendreth Threads of Fate bar? And I'm like, well, it showed up when I was in a dungeon. They're like, look at your quest log. And sure enough, it was there in like the campaign section. And I just had to track it so that I could figure out how far in I was. So just be aware that if you do pick it up from anything other than going and getting the quest from Ouroboros, it will be in your quest log. It just won't be automatically tracked. You have to try to see where you're.
Yeah, I still do like the idea of Threads of Fate. I think they do need to do a little work to make it a bit more user-friendly than it currently is. But generally speaking, I like the idea that once you've leveled through once, you don't have to do it again if you don't want to. That being said, I think it's actually a bit more fun to just level like the old-fashioned way, just do it again. Partially because the first time you level through, like some people don't do this, some people do. I tend to get really focused on leveling the mm-hmm. first time through because you're trying to get to max level. I was trying to get to max level pretty quickly while also dealing with life and other stuff, so I was behind. And I wasn't really. Here's one example. This is a daily quest. It's not a world quest. It's a daily quest to go kill one of the various elites that spawns in the Theater of Pain. You can do it every day. In order to get it unlocked, you have to have done the Theater of Pain side stuff in Maldraxxus, which is very easy not to do.
Oh, you can miss that real easy.
Yeah. Nobody tells you to do it. I got lucky and I did it. I did it at the time. I think I was trying to hoover up as much experience as possible without going to Revendreth, which I really didn't want to go to Revendreth again. This is not a thing about Revendreth being bad. I literally just done it like the day before. Like, so I was like, oh God, I don't want to do that again. I just did it. So I went through and did the whole Theater of Pain side quest thing, killed the three elites, and that unlocks these world quests. I mean, this daily quest, and it's 105 anima a day. And you can do it every day. So you can make like 735 anima in the course of a week just doing this one world quest. I mean, this one daily quest every day. And it's not a world quest. So you always have to go take the quest, but it's every day. So that's a pretty big jump. That's a big pump of anima. It basically makes that much less stressful. But if you didn't do that quest, which is super easy to not do the quest chain, then it doesn't exist on the map. You can't get the quest. And it's like you have to go do the Theater of Pain side quests and then wait for your next reset before the quest starts showing up. That's weird. And there's nothing that tells you about it. And that's the kind of thing I feel like doing, like just leveling your character through. There's a lot of stuff out in the world. Shadowland has a lot of stuff. Maldraxxus has a lot of questing in it. And all the zones do. I remember doing Bastion the first time and almost missing that whole bit in the center with the two Kyrian that, like, you know, robots are better. No, live cats are better.
Because that's one thing you could easily miss.
Yeah. So to a degree, I feel like if in order for Threads of Fate to become a system that I would want to use all the way through, it would need to pick up on player, like letting players know, okay, go do this. Here's how this works. I almost feel like it kind of could have used a touch of what they did with like the older expansions. The thing with Kiri, with not Kiri, oh, I can't remember her name now.
The breadcrumbs between hubs.
Chromie, yeah. Chromie actually does a really good job of getting you into the, like, okay, we're going to scale everything. It's just, it feels like some of that needed to be put in.
And don't get me wrong, like, I'm not opposed to a system in which, like, exploration is prized, but I feel like in a game like this, because you can miss so much, like Maldraxxus is a really, really good example of it. There was a point where I was doing one of my Covenant callings, and it was to, you know, do three world quests in Maldraxxus. And one of the quests is running around and lighting the champion's brazier. And I found a whole ton of quest hubs just doing that circuit that I didn't know existed, that when I was leveling, I just completely missed. Like, it was weird, and it was so close to the center of the biggest part of the map, and I just never saw them. So, like, little tiny breadcrumbs, even as an NPC saying, hey, go over here, I hear there's people looking for help, would probably not be a bad thing. And I don't mind, like, having to explore to find things, but I think there might be too much of that this expansion.
It's interesting because it does kind of remind me. I've played a lot of games that have an option to turn on guided mode or exploration mode. And I tend to play those games exploration mode. But I think with an MMO, sometimes if progression is tied to it, you kind of need to have a little more help. And it depends. There's some really good tutorial stuff in WoW, this expansion. Exile's Reach is amazing. But I can't help but be sidetracked by the fact that I'm imagining some Maldraxxi champion going to her room and going, that shaman burned my bra again.
I do that every single time with that word. I don't know why. My brain just does that. I apologize.
You're not the only one. This guy in my raid does the same thing. I actually had to train myself to not do it.
But anyway, slowly working on that.
We should probably move on to the next email because I feel like we talked about this for a while.
Dear Watchers, why do you think your mount changes when you fly to Ouroboros? For example, you could be riding a bat, and then it changes into a mana worm thing. I think it's an animal worm, but close enough. As you enter the in-between. Thanks for the insight, Medjai, a Night Elf Demon Hunter.
I don't know if I have any insight for you, because I've done that 100 times, and every time I'm like, why did that happen? You know, it doesn't happen the inverse way. You fly from Ouroboros to, say, Bastion.
Uh-huh.
It stays an anima worm the whole way through.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. But when you fly from Bastion, you're like, hey, I'm flying on one of those Larian Lion things. Oh, nope, it's a mono worm now. And it stays a mono worm, like, when you leave, like, say you're flying from Bastion to Revendreth. You fly up till you hit the point where you're going to the in-between. It turns into an anima worm, and then it stays an anima worm. It doesn't turn back into something. It's not. It doesn't change into, like, a bat in Revendreth. It stays an anima worm the whole way through. I don't know, like, it doesn't bother me. I just find myself, like, I'm fascinated with the idea that, like, there's a handoff. Like, I imagine, like, literally there's an animal worm waiting there, and I get to a certain point, and I have to jump off and onto the animal worm, and then boom, into the in-between, because, you know, normal creatures don't travel into the in-between. Like, the idea that the Larian's like, I'm not doing that. That's crazy. You get on that animal worm. I don't know if that's what it is. There's nothing in-game that explains what it is. I'd like to imagine that that's what it is, like it's a relay thing, but I have nothing to back me up. It's just a fun little thing in my head to explain why I'm suddenly on a completely different mount. But it is something I've noticed.
The reason it bothers me is because it's asymmetrical. So, like, you can travel from one zone to another zone. Like, we see Sylvan do it. We see Venthyr do it. We see folks from Aldraxis do it, and they keep their form. That doesn't change. Like, that form is their body. They're transformed into. That's it. It bothers me, though, that, like, these creatures, which we are told are constructs of anima, no matter what covenant you're part of, which, you know, the bats, the lion guys, Larians, all of that stuff, they're constructs of anima. I can accept that when you get to the in-between, that they change from whatever they were to a sort of transient state of an anima worm. What bothers me is when you get to the next zone that it doesn't change into whatever creature it would be in that zone. And I don't know why, beyond the fact that it's just an asymmetrical transformation. That's the part that bothers me. And I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if there's ever going to be an in-game explanation for it, or if it's just the way the system works, or if you are leaping midair or mid in between, like Matt's saying, where from one creature to the other and the other one turns around and says, yep, I'm good.
Well, it's like, for that matter, this is not related to that, but it's something I think about. When you go to the maw and you try to mount up, it says your mount does not respond or something like that.
Yeah.
And my wife was pointing out, I'm trying to call up a motorcycle. My motorcycle refuses to hear my call. It's a motorcycle. My motorcycle's having a conscience of Christ. I think, I'm not going to there. That's the literal hell.
I watch Knight Rider. That can happen.
There weren't any motorcycles on Knight Rider.
No, but sentient vehicles, that's a thing.
Actually, was there a sentient motorcycle in that ride?
I don't think there was a motorcycle, but there was a second car for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously there were multiple, talking cars. Regardless, I have a mount that's a flying disc that's called a cloud.
Yeah.
I can't call my disc cloud because it's like, what? The cloud has a problem with this? It's a cloud. So, yeah, there's some stuff is just never going to be explained, and it's just never going to really make sense. And I'm okay with that. I don't really expect it to. The animal worm thing, though, I have noticed 100 times. Like, every time I fly,
every single time.
Yeah, every time I go anywhere from anywhere to another zone, I know that once I hit the part where I'm heading to Ouroboros, it's going to turn into an animal worm, and then it's going to stay an animal worm. It doesn't turn into a bat when you hit Revendreth. I can see why that would bug you. I understand that, it is asymmetrical. Why doesn't it turn into something? Because it would make sense if it was just always an animal worm that just took on a form that made sense in the zone it was in.
Yeah.
So it became a Lyrian or whatever. Or it would make sense if you're doing the trade-off thing that you fly a Lyrian up to, like, the portal that takes you to Ouroboros. There's an animal worm waiting for you there. You switch over. When you get to Revendreth, you jump off the animal worm and onto whatever the next mount is. That would make sense, too. Neither of those things happen.
I think this is just a trick of the brokers. This is very clearly their fault. 100%. They're doing it. Yep. They're my scapegoat, this experience. Don't like the way something works? Brokers. I'm going to go with that. All right. Our next one. A question for my heroes who speak to me from the radio. Aw, well, thank you. It is time. After all these many years, I have to make space in my home, and no amount of rationalization works to justify keeping all the old original game boxes and CDs and a couple collector's editions and Brady guidebook, and yeah. My wife is barely letting me keep my Chen Stormstout figure. I'm not looking to make any money off this stuff, but is there a market for it? The books are very used, but the CDs were maybe twice-ish. Would these make someone happy? Do people still like this stuff? What stuff is liked, and what can I just toss give to Goodwill? And this is from, it's either Tyrese or Thyrese, the seafaring druid on the Tyrellian realm, still trying to get to max level. Hard to do if you can't, if you can only play 0 to 2 hours.
I don't know, your situation. I know that there's sites like Kijiji or, oh, bloody heck, what's the one where they kept having horror stories of people, having their stuff. I can't remember the name of it. It's not Kijiji, but it's, I can't remember. Oh, my God. Joe, please.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sites where you would basically say, hey, I have an X. Do you want it? Does anybody want my bike, my exercise bike?
There's the Let It Go and
Craigslist,
Let It Go, stuff like that. Yeah, there's some.
There's basically, I think you would be surprised. I say this as a guy who has collector's editions up to, like, I think, Mists of Pandaria. Actually, I have the Legion one too. I stopped getting them after Legion because I kept buying the digitals. So, but the ones I have were given to me by someone. Like, and he'd already used them. He'd already gotten the pet off of them. But I mean, I wanted the art book and the DVD. So yeah, there's people who want those things. I know, because I'm one of them. I think if you went on Kijiji or Craigslist or whatever and said, hey, to a good home, all this WoW stuff, you would get inundated with offers. There are people who would absolutely jump on them. I mean, you have to make it clear. You're not going to get the pet because I already used that. But, you know, the special book, this, that, and the other thing, the mouse pads, people will take them. You probably won't get like a lot of money off for them, but people will absolutely be like, I'll take that. Yeah, I definitely think that you could advertise and that people would want them.
Yeah, and I will definitely agree with that. I am a horrible, horrible, horrible collector of so many things. And that just means I collect too many things and don't have enough space for them.
It's drowning and stuff.
Sometimes I am. But I like the art books. I like the collector's editions and things like that. I haven't bought them since, before Warlords. When Warlords released, I never got the special edition and I just didn't. But thanks to, and I'll give him a shout out here, Matt Lowe, I was really looking for the art book for Shadowlands, because I didn't buy a collector's edition because I'm going to put it, but I have bookshelves. And not only did Matt get me the Shadowlands art book, he got me all of the art books that I was missing, so that I literally all of the versions of the game that have released, which makes me incredibly. But there is a market for it. Like, I know people that have sold their old collector's editions with the soundtracks in them still, even though the soundtracks are available on Spotify, that have the mouse pads in them, that have the art books in them. Sometimes people just want the box. There's a market for just the boxes themselves, too. Especially now that we live in a world of streamers and people that do stuff on Twitch. And one of the things that every book or every lesson or every Skillshare class you take tells you is have an interesting background. And if you're into WoW, that's one of the things that is really easy to put on the back behind you and have those collector's edition boxes, because they are distinct. So there is a market for them. So if you are looking to get rid of them, you could probably turn those into either part and parcel, like a whole thing where you sell like this collector's edition, all contents redeemed, and make some money off of it. Or you could probably parse out the individual components of it, including the box itself, on sites like eBay and other places. Like, there is absolutely a market for collectors. When we're into collecting something, we wind up picking up things that we, even if we're not super gung-ho about, it's like, yeah, but it matches my set, so I kind of need it too. So you can definitely make some cash off of, or, you know, find somebody.
Even if you don't want to make money off of it, you're seriously just trying to get rid of it,
you can find somebody.
Someone like you probably say, hey, free to a good home, boom, someone will show up and take it. Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that there's somebody out there who would take it.
Yep.
Absolutely. As a guy who basically one day someone's just said, hey, I've been following you on this site for a long time. Do you want all these collector's items? And I was like, yes, yes, I do. And he gave them to me. Actually, I met him at the local mall. The local mall is the West Edmonton Mall, which is the largest mall in North America. And I met him there and he had them in bags and I had to walk them home because they would they were too much to carry on to the bus. By the time I got home, my arms hurt because he literally gave me all the StarCraft II collector's editions, all of them for all of the different versions of that game. He gave me Diablo 3 and Diablo 3 expansion collector's editions on that. And he gave me every World of Warcraft collector's edition up to Legion. So yeah, there's people who will take it. I am one of those people. And I already had some of them. Like I already had the Burning Crusade one. I already had the Wrath one. So I was doubling up in some cases, but I was like, yeah, absolutely. Sure. I'll take them. Bring them on over. He gave me the Warcraft 3 collector's edition.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which has the art book, which is like, the art book is on my shelves. That's how much I wanted that. So yeah, there's absolutely somebody out there for these things for you. If you just want to give them away, people will come. If you want to sell them, I positively guarantee you someone will buy them.
Oh yeah.
They may not sell for a ton. Like if you've, you know, if all the collectible stuff has been taken out and it's just stuff like the art books and so forth, they probably won't go for a ton of money, but someone will give you something. Absolutely. Not a problem.
Yep. So I think we're going to move on next to, well, it looks like we have a duo of questions coming from Verdigris, our good friend there. First up, hello, Watchers. Can you explain the overall goal Arthas had when he was the Lich King? Was it preparation for the Legion? Was it trying to wrestle control and hold back the Scourge? Was it just mass domination of life? I didn't play Wrath, and I'm just trying to figure out the mindset and motivation of Arthas after he put on the helm to when he gets defeated.
Keeping in mind that we're learning stuff about that right now, learning stuff we didn't know.
This past week, like, if you, again, do catch up and do this week's quest for Bolvar, you get some insight. But I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. But keeping in mind that that's there and we still could learn more in the future, I don't know how to put this. Arthas wasn't a simple person and he didn't have just one overarching motivation for everything he did. Clearly, one of the things Arthas wanted was to prove that he was right. And you see that, like his whole young heroes, I was once like you. Everything he does is ultimately trying to lead a select force of heroes up to Ice Crown so that he can turn them into his strike force. Like, he's decided the Scourge by itself isn't going to cut it. Like, they're just too many mindless forces. I need more guys like Anubarak who can think. I need, like, heroes that can be like the champions of the Scourge, who can go forth and be like I was. He wants his own him. Remember, Ner'zhul had him. Ner'zhul, when he was the Lich King, had an Arthas to go out and execute his will. And it worked really well. They did everything Ner'zhul wanted them to do because he had an Arthas out there being the hero leading the Scourge. He wants that. He wants a bunch of people to do that for him. Why is he doing it? It's clear that he does believe that it's the only way to defeat the Legion. He even says as much if you read the Chronicle books. It's one of the things Arthas holds forth is that it's the only way to beat the Legion. But it's also pretty clear now that he also knows that after the Legion,
there's more threats.
Yeah, there's something coming. He was spending his time thinking about how to get around the Jailer. Because the Jailer even says, and I there's some spoilery stuff here, but I think at this point it's been a couple weeks. The Jailer says as much. He says that every Lich King has been a failure, that none of them did what he wanted. So I think that Arthas's motivations are a little hard for me to parse out for you. There's multiple of them.
Yeah. So I think part of it is that we don't really know what was going on in Arthas's mind quite. And I think part of that is going to come to light. And at least I hope it does. Like, I've heard a lot of people say they don't want another Arthas story. They don't want more Arthas story. They don't want more Arthas story. I disagree with that. I think it's the right time to have some closure to it. Like, we killed Arthas as the Lich King. We don't know anything that happened to him in between. We know that kind of what he was doing in Ice Crown. We don't know his motivations. We don't know what he saw. But now we know that, like, where the helm came from, where Frostmourne came from. We know who they were tied to. We know that the Lich King was intended for something that wasn't with Arthas. We don't know what he saw. We don't know what he was preparing. We don't know the importance of that. This could also, and this is going to sound like completely, you know, out of left field maybe, but this could also be part of the reason why he raised Sylvanas like he did, is not because he wanted a mindless servant like we're talking about. She was a ranger general. She would have held him at bay had it not been for betrayal. That's the kind of person you want working for you in some capacity, whether it's willing or unwilling. That person's brilliant. You want to use them. So, like, he was doing things that weren't just domination, that weren't just for the sake of having, like, this plague of undeath that he could just unleash, but we don't know the full extent of. And I really would love to spend some time getting to understand what he saw in comparison to what Bolvar saw. Because Bolvar has been pretty vocal about it, this expansion so far, of what he saw, why he was doing some of the things he was doing. Is that why Arthas was doing the things he was doing at one point when he put on the helm? When did it all start? Like, when did he start churning things over? But yeah, I think there's more to it than we know. I think there's deeper layers there that have yet to be discovered. Anything you want to add to that before we move on to Verd's second question?
No, I think I covered it.
All right. This one has the subject of why is tanking? Hello, Blizzard Watchers. Isn't it weird that tanks are all liars, pretending to be threatening while usually doing almost no damage? I guess it seems hilarious to me that no matter if you are a magic blair druid, a tactical warrior, or a righteous paladin, your most important job is deception and manipulation. I guess I can see it with the whole bravado facade Tyrallian had in Stormguard. It did make me want to punch him. What's your opinion? Verdigris.
Quite frankly, the Horde deserved every second of Tyrallian telling you what jerks you are. You just straight up suck it. I'm not even gonna play. You know, you guys burned my damn hometown down. Straight up, don't like you. But you know, now that I'm not being my character, being Matt, the guy who plays World of Warcraft, I think that I've always thought it was kind of funny. I've tanked for a long time. I haven't tanked much of this expansion, but every expansion previously I've tanked. One of the things that's kind of funny about it, as you think about it, is that there's an ability called Taunt.
Mm-hmm.
I can use Taunt on things that I don't speak their language. Like, no matter like what they are, I can taunt them. Does like becoming a tank, do they give you a book of dirty phrases and gestures in any language? It's like, you know, what did that human just say to you? Something about my mom? I don't understand. I was like hatched from an egg. Why? But I'm angry. That angered me that thing that the human said in Broken Dragon. I don't know how it works. It's kind of like Misdirect, which is one of those abilities. Misdirect or Tricks of the Trade or whatever. It's always been one of those abilities that I think about. A hunter shoots an arrow into a guy and then...
Wasn't me!
Goes, John, I can't believe you shot him! There's a lot of that in World of Warcraft, especially with tanking. It is kind of odd that tanks do... although, tank damage has really fluctuated over the years.
There was a point in time where tanks were doing more damage than some DPS classes.
They can still kind of be doing more damage than like a reasonably well geared tank can still do more damage than some of the DPS. I mean, it does depend on the situation, but the damage isn't as low as it used to be. But in general, yeah, the tank isn't there to deal out damage. The tank is there basically to take hits. Why that exists, why we have that, should, you know, not every game has a thing like tanking, but most MMOs do that I can think of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always kind of wondered why we have, like, the Diablo Immortal is fascinating to me because I don't think they're really going to have tanks. And I'm not sure how their combat system is going to work if it's just going to be like Diablo where everybody just hits things all the time. I don't know. But in terms of World of Warcraft, yeah, tanking has always been there, and it always has been kind of weird if you stop and think about it. Not just for the whole, you know, idea of, you know, hit me, I'm the danger, but I'm clearly not actually the danger if the boss has a DPS meter. Luckily, he doesn't. Luckily, he can't stop and look and go, hey, wait a minute. The entire threat mechanic is just papering over the fact that this guy is the least dangerous to me, and I should be killing the healer. That's, you know, that's one of the things that Joe and I talk about tabletop all the time. You have to actually, as a dungeon master, you have to, like, not allow yourself to just go kill the cleric immediately.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, it would make sense, but you don't know off the front of the bat that guy's the healer until you see him cast a healing spell. Plus, in D&D, there's not really that level of healing. You don't see, like, WoW in particular, you take a ton of damage, and, like, multiple people are sitting there keeping you up through it. And there's lots of area effect damage going out. The entire tanking healing DPS paradigm is fascinating and weird. And I think the reason it exists goes back to the earliest computer role playing games because they had a different mechanic for deciding who's taking damage and why they're taking it because they don't have a live DM to sit there and make decisions for the boss. They had to have a system. They had to have a method by which you could tell what it was doing. And that's where threat mechanics come from, and it's old now. I mean, this is going back to like the late 1990s.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm going to shut up and let Joe talk from a healer perspective. But yeah, basically, I would argue that yeah, it's pretty weird.
It is weird, but I like to call tanks shout wizards. Basically, because to me, it's the sort of like this wordless challenge, and it's always been like a cinematic thing in my brain. Where like, yeah, you're the tank, but that just means that you are portraying yourself as the biggest threat to whatever's in front of you. And so like, whether that's puffing your chest out or, you know, clanging your weapon on the ground or making this loud noise or making yourself seem bigger, there are wordless ways, to threaten something into making or to perceiving you as the largest threat to its existence. It is funny that tanks are not meant to be a damage dealing class in a lot of games, but I think Matt's absolutely right. They can, in a lot of cases, deal a metric ton of damage. It's not something to be.
I still miss Vengeance.
I know you.
You guys, near the end of Cataclysm, I was doing so much damage on some fights. Spine of Deathwing will always forever be in my head as the heyday of me just jumping around, thunderclapping, constantly getting bleeds on everything.
I'm pretty confident you and I could have just duo that fight at level.
Yeah. Just don't let me die and I will keep annoying these things. Yeah.
But
I remember the first time I did that fight, and I don't mean to sidetrack
you. No, you're fine. Sidetrack.
When I first did that fight, the first time, it was basically me and there was a priest, a disciplined priest who was my healer. And between my heroic leaps and their leap of faiths, just pulling me away from the mobs constantly, and the mobs would just all like come swarming after me, and then I'd be over there, and it was just like the Keystone Cops, these things constantly following around. This shouldn't work. But I mean, they were mindless oozes. It's not like they can think. They're just oozes. So it's fine. But it does kind of get weird when a super genius, you know, masterful intellect like the Lich King spends all of this time hitting you in the face while literally everybody around him is setting him on fire, throwing arrows into his chest, and he's focusing on you. I have to feel like he's annoyed with you. Like, there just has to be like, why won't you die? Because I have six people keeping me from dying. Please don't pay attention.
Yeah.
It is a strange thing, but I think to a degree, it's one of those things that, you know, you have to think about it. Like, yeah, it's a game convention, but also it's not like, you know, your healers wear a sign around their head saying, I'm healing him. And everybody's doing magic at once. It's not like you can specifically go, okay, that guy's casting a healing spell on him. Yeah, it's obvious to us, but it doesn't necessarily obvious in the game world.
I mean, don't forget, like in game world, like my character is a tiny fox person who wears a dress. I'm a healer. The person who stands next to me is a troll mage who also wears a dress, and he's casting fireballs. You can't just look and determine what something is.
You're not wearing a sign around your head that says "gank me first." You know.
But yeah, it is an odd thing, and it's funny we bring that up because it's something that I think about a lot in game design aspects. Is there a world in which an MMO can exist without the traditional trilogy of classes at this point? And the tanking is probably the hardest thing to sort of decouple. I think certain games like Destiny handle it better, even though they do technically have tanking classes. But it's all interposition, right? It's a different type of game. But it's fascinating to think about. And Matt's right that this is such an ancient thing from old school RPGs and video games that is just sort of carried.
And it's weird. We were talking about 4th edition D&D, and we don't really have time for this discussion, but one of the things it did was it tried to bring tanking into D&D.
It did.
And I think it worked, but I think for a lot of players, that was the point where they were like, no, I don't like this. It's because D&D didn't have that. For all that people think of D&D as the big daddy that sparked it all, there's no tanks in D&D. Like, there's no, my class is going to sit here and make you hit me.
Yeah, and healers are a support class, but it's not their primary function. Like, clerics and druids, like, I was just talking with somebody, like, what class they should play. They didn't realize that druids were not just healers, but, like, went through the list. Like, druids can throw lightning and cast ice storms and typhoon waves and oof.
Yeah, there's a druid spell that literally just throws a giant wave that can kill an elemental in seconds, especially a fire element. And I didn't even realize it. And my wife was playing D&D with me. She was like playing the druid character, and she realized it and just wiped out an entire area of fire elementals I thought were going to be a big challenge. She took them out in like one go. I'm like, okay, that's over. You know? So yeah, classes in D&D aren't the same, and it is interesting to see it. But yeah, we're getting kind of late here, so.
Yeah, I think that's all we have time for. And we did all of our questions, so thank you everybody who sent those in. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you have a question for the show, you can either use our Discord. There's the Patreon Q and Podcast channel and the Q Questions channel, both of which we look at for questions. And you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. Thank you guys so much for being here with us every week as we do this here podcast that we love. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast, and we will be back next week.
Thank you. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.